You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by the Beautiful Game Network, Roughneck Scarves, and Golden Goal Press. We are coming to you on the evening of Monday, June 17th, 2019. We've got a great and very U.S. national team focused show for you tonight, but first, let me bring in my co-host, trusty sidekick Daniel Sperry. Dan, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing well, on the eve of vacation for me, so that's exciting. That's kind of where I'm at. My brain has been fried over the last few weeks, and I'm just like, okay, tomorrow it starts.
Fantastic, and it sounds like you could definitely use a break. And then our intrepid women's soccer reporter, Rachel McCrigger. Rachel, your thoughts on the Women's World Cup so far?
I don't want it to end. Please don't let it end. I love it so much. And I actually love VAR, too.
Okay, good stuff then. Unfortunately, all good things have to come to an end. Like, eventually, there has to be a champion. We can't just have, like, an infinite Women's World Cup that never actually leads to any conclusion. And I guess maybe having continuous World Cups would devalue them. But in any case, let's get into talking it. So, first of all, Rachel, the U.S. Women's National Team have already punched their ticket in through the knockout round. No matter what happens in their final group stage game against Sweden, they'll at least be the second place team. And with goal differential, they really only need a draw against the Sweden team. And a Sweden team that I think, based on the two results they've had against equal opponents, the U.S. are certainly a better team. Your thoughts on the on Jill Ellis's side so far in the World Cup and what you see in their final group stage match?
I wouldn't necessarily outright call the U.S. a better team over Sweden, because I think Sweden has a better defense than the United States. That's just been way too shaky, and it hasn't really been tested at all for the United States. I mean, you saw the one time it was really tested against Chile. Alyssa Nahir completely threw a gap, and luckily she was saved by the offsides flag, or else that would have been a goal. Also, I mean, you had your second string defenders, but your second string, in terms of U.S. abundance, is not really a second string. It's still a first string. It'll be an interesting match. I don't think, even though Hope Solo isn't on the roster, I don't think Sweden fans and the players are going to forget the infamous cowards comment, and they faced off against each other in the group stage in 2015 to a scoreless draw, so I think they're going to want to change the tide this year. Someone can win, someone can lose, someone can draw. I wouldn't be too surprised to see a draw, but we'll just see how it goes. I think when you get those front three back, Rapinoe, Heath, and Morgan, I think that's going to cause a lot of trouble. I think after the performance she had against Chile, I think Tierna Davidson should be a starter, and she actually kind of helped my case being a left back and pushing Crystal down up to the attack somewhere. But with the United States in their lovely problem of abundance, which is the best problem a coach could have, there's just so much talent, you can't put them all on the pitch at once. So it's trying to place people to get that talent out there. But I mean, two assists, Tierna Davidson didn't look like the 20-year-old rookie that we're used to seeing. So I think it'll be a really good match. I'm really excited. And I think it's a really big question mark, because you have two great teams, and we'll just see what happens.
One of my concerns for this World Cup, and I mean, it's been a narrative really around the women's national team once we saw the draw and how things could shake out once you get to the knockout stage, is that they're not really going to face a legitimate threat until they get to that quarterfinal, what feels like an inevitable U.S. against host France, at the Parc des Princes in Paris. And if we compare that to, say, to the 2015 Women's World Cup, the women had a little bit of a slow start, but they were in the group of death and they had a couple really good challenges, and they kind of worked through some of the issues that they had in that tournament to then being battle tested by the time they got to the big games they needed to, and obviously a fantastic result and performance, especially in the first half of the final against Japan, to see them through and win the trophy. Dan, how worried are you given the quality of opponent they're facing, and really up until Sweden, you know, on, you know, depending on how the game goes, you know, this coming week, they're really not going to face the test until they're playing possibly the other favorite in the tournament. Like, is this, should we read anything into the U.S. beating up on bad teams rather than actually getting a good test against a quality opponent who then is going to get them ready for a quarterfinal, semifinal, or potentially a final against Germany, for example?
I like the ramp up almost in intensity for them. If you're looking at the group stage, you kind of ramp it up, right? So you go with the worst team, you blow them out, you get them out and good on your goal differential set up in the first game. You take clear control of the group from then on. And then after that, go into Chile, who's a better team than Thailand for sure. They're a lot stronger defensively, a little bit more organized, and they were, for the most part, relatively tough for the national team to break down. Goalkeeper did an incredible job of keeping that game 3-0. There's a few more opportunities there, but U.S. had a lot of chances on set pieces because they weren't able to play through what Chile does. I think what will be interesting to see is what does Sweden do? How does Sweden approach them? Because if Sweden wants to play a counter game, or if they want to, they have a strong defense, what do they do when they kind of to handle the U.S. national team attack? It'll be a good test for the U.S. for the women's national team to finally get out of a, all, you know, 10 of 11 players inside the final third, because that's what it's almost been for the last two games. I think it's a good test, for them. I like the ramp up of intensity and opponent. They send their message. They get to rotate a little bit for the second game against Chile because they've taken such a strong grip of the group. And then now they've got players rested and avoided yellow card suspensions and everything for the big match in that group, which is that final match against Sweden, which can set them up for their run through the knockout stages. And it also kind of builds up for them. So I'm excited for the quality that Sweden will bring against them. I'm not as nervous for them playing against Sweden as I was in years past. I think we know the firepower that this team has, and what they're able to do despite a lot of the noise about tactics and too many changes here and Jill Ellis and running up scores and all this stuff. This team is still one of the best teams in the world, if not the best team in the world, for a reason. And Sweden's very, very good, but they're not at that level. But it is a much nicer ramp up. That's the type of team that the U.S. will be facing for the rest of the tournament. And I think it's nice to not have that game off the bat, and then you get lulled to sleep with these easier games on the back end. And then all of a sudden you kind of got to really ramp up your mental intensity and awareness for the latter parts of the tournament. So I'm excited for the match against Sweden. I think it'll be a good test for the women. I love the way this team has been playing. But it will be a nice to face a stiff test and, kind of get maybe a team that'll finally put them on their back foot a little bit and see how they face some of the pressure.
Rachel, one concern that I do have about this team, and Dan's points on that are well taken as far as the ramp up of quality, is, you know, maybe there's going to be a couple moments against Sweden, but again, not really having a quality opponent to test them, and in particular on the defensive side of things. You know, I'm trying to break away from the narrative in terms of my own analysis of Alyssa Nair in comparing her to, you know, Hope Solo, who on paper, on field, is, you know, hands down the best women's goalkeeper in the history of the United States and probably the world. You know, now is not the time for us to touch some of the other things that went on with Hope Solo in the locker room, post-game media, and off the field, but she hasn't really been tested on the one test that she had. You know, she got bailed out by the officials with the offside call against Chile, in particular on her side of the ball, and everything going on defensively. How concerned are we that they're not really going to get a good warm-up game before playing a France, a Germany, an Italy, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I think that you have to look back at the last 6 months, too, and look at who they've played for these World Cup tune-up games. So you have your three send-off series games, and you blank all of your opponents. But before that, you play Australia. And Australia put up three goals against us. We put up five against them. But, you know, still putting up 3 goals against our defense. Not that good. And I mean, France put 3 on us. Spain was pretty good competition despite us winning 1-0. I think that Sweden can possibly exploit some of those defensive flaws. I don't think that Dahl Kemper and Sauerbrunn partnership is quite as stable as everyone thinks it is. Kelly O'Hara has been injured on and off for the last 2 years. And on the left, I mean, Crystal Dunn's not a natural, she's not a natural left back. She's got the speed to be one, but she's not a natural one. So I think it's not just on the goalkeeping, although the goalkeeping is definitely a problem. And I think it needs to be fixed very soon. I don't know if I can see them winning a World Cup with Alyssa Nayer in goal. I don't think she's the goalkeeper of the future. And I'm a little concerned with how Sweden is going to attack, because they're going to want to pressure them. They're going to see on tape what France did against the United States. They're going to see what Australia did, and they're going to try to get some of those goals back. And then be the, because if Sweden wants to be the top in Group F, they need to win. And they know that. They won't settle for second place. I mean, yeah, getting through to the knockouts is great, but being on top of your group is even better.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Dan, I guess last question that I have. We've now seen every single field player for the U.S. Women's National Team take the field, and it was kind of interesting to see all the changes they had, and it's still fantastic, and as Rachel said, a good problem, and really scary if I'm anybody playing the U.S., the fact that their backup front three has Crystal as Kristen Press, Mallory Pugh, and then and then Carly Lloyd as well. What do you make of the squad rotation? And, you know, is there a clear first line in terms of what they're going to play against Sweden? And are we going to see that through really to the end of, you know, potentially a final?
I think there is pretty much a clear first kind of choice here among who they've got going. Alex Morgan is the clear choice forward for me. As much as I like Kristen Press, I love what she does. I think she's a really good goal scorer. Alex Morgan is Alex Morgan, and she's going to be up top, especially if they're going with a solo striker. They're going to play in a 4-3-3. I love Tobin Heath out wide. You have Megan Rapinoe out wide. Those are your very clear front three. It kind of depends what – I think what depends is what they want to do in the midfield. If they want to play – they did this against Japan. I remember in the She Believes Cup a couple years ago, when U.S. and Japan played out here, they ran more of a 4-2-3-1 and they played Ertz, alongside, I can't remember who else was in the midfield. It might have been Morgan Bryan or somebody like that, but they had played kind of a 4-2-3-1 and did the dual sixes or dual eight kind of a thing, underneath. Kind of two quote destroyer mids, even though Julie Ertz has become more of a number six in this setup. So I think it kind of depends on what they want to do, whether Carly Lloyd is kind of involved, in that front group, at least for me. If they want to go to destroyer kind of mids in the midfield, and have two that kind of split the defensive duties in there and then have a true number 10 like Carly, in front of them, that makes sense. But I don't think Carly worked if they're going to run the 4-3-3 where they have the solo six with the two roaming kind of free eights in front of them, very similar to what Sporting Kansas City, what Greg Berhalter liked to do, and a few others there. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out when they go, and I think that'll maybe go kind of an opponent base for them. But for me, as much as I loved what Mal Pugh and Kristen Press and a few of the others brought to them for that front line and that squad rotation, I mean, it was nice to get them some chances. Chile is a winnable game with those players as the starting lineup and resting Alex Morgan and Tobin Heath and Megan Rapinoe there. But for me, that front three is probably one of the most daunting in the world, and there's a reason why that's probably the clear first choice for me.
Absolutely. I guess last thing that we'll do, let's do a round table with everybody, and I'm going to ask you for one other narrative or things that you were surprised by or that you've enjoyed about this World Cup. Rachel, I'll start with you. Any other non-U.S. national team related things you've noticed from the Women's World Cup that you like or want to highlight?
Well, I have two, mainly. I love the Thailand goal. You have to love the emotion and just everything about that. It was so cool, and just to see all of the players finally get that. I mean, it's a consolation goal, but it means so much more to their federation, to the people that fund the team and whatnot. And then I love Italy. They're so fun to watch. I mean, their goals weren't the most flashy when they faced off against Jamaica, but I mean, it was a good game. I really enjoy watching them, and that's what happens when you pay attention to the women's game in your country and fund your women's team.
Dan?
I don't know if I have. I haven't watched as much outside of the women, the U.S. women's national team. I don't want to get into the whole VAR thing too much, just because I understand why VAR couldn't correctly do couldn't make the call that everyone was complaining about. If you want to know about that, go check out. I think Rob Stone has a good feed on that, and they discussed it as well on the Fox thing tonight. Why the encroachment from France is not subject to review, so they can't call it back. Or can't kind of negate the off the line in there. You can have a debate whether or not she deserved to be called off the line. That's kind of the biggest thing that I've seen from this tournament so far is the VAR stuff has been very, I feel like the VAR stuff has been adjudicated to be very literal, whereas last year in Russia it wasn't. And I think that's why there was a lot of good things that came from VAR, I think, during the World Cup. But it seemed like the Women's World Cup has gone very, very literal with its adjudication out of it. I'm not sure if I like that, and I don't necessarily like that trend, but that's another rant for another day. U.S. Women's National Team related, Tierna Davidson was probably one of my favorite players last night. Stanford girl, NorCal girl, Bay Area girl. She is awesome. And just seeing how much she's grown over the last couple of years, to kind of had her when she kind of came into the system, at least when I really started paying attention to her when she was out here in Kansas City. I believe they had her as a center back, which was odd in that setup. She was kind of a ball playing center back in a very possession oriented setup that they were playing. They moved her out wide as kind of a fullback, last week, service that she was giving into the box was incredible. She's got a wonderful left foot, great service. I'm excited for the future of her, the national team. I like Crystal Dunn on the left side, but if Tierna Davidson's a natural left footer and a natural fullback, man, that would be great to see her, to kind of see how, the fullback role, as we've seen it kind of develop in the men's game, how that's become, to really see that kind of take hold so much in the women's game, and really to have those two-way power fullbacks, the Marcelo types in the women's game and stuff like that. That's an area in the women's game that just hasn't kind of come along, I feel like, at least from my perspective, which isn't a whole lot. And Rachel, if I'm wrong, you can correct me on that. But I have enjoyed seeing what Tierna Davidson's done. And she's still very young, and just there's a bright future ahead of her with that type of service that she brings in the box. And that's going to be a big thing going forward in the tournament, and also for the future of the women's national team.
I'm going to highlight Group B and Group C. I've been absolutely impressed with the three teams who are advancing on out of Group B. Germany, who was perfect, 9 points, a +6 goal differential, has not conceded a goal. They're the team who, for me, on paper, I think is the second best team other than the United States in this tournament. If this game was not being played in France, I would have them as probably, you know, I'd have U.S. and France. That's a coin flip in terms of who do I think is more favored, both in a head-to-head case, and would be more favored to win the tournament. If this game was not being played in France, I would have Germany probably as number two in that group. I have them right now as number three because France is playing in their home country for this tournament. So they've been fantastic in the group. Three comprehensive performances against three not bad teams other than South Africa, really. And then Spain, a good young team who I'm excited to see. I don't know how far they're going to get, but definitely major strides for them as a women's soccer nation. And then, you know, China getting through already, you know, booked in as one of the best third teams. And then out of Group C, I'll retweet and favorite what you were saying about Italy, Rachel. And then we were talking about this before we hit the record button, but just really heartbroken for Jamaica, the reggae girls. I was, you know, they were my Iceland for this tournament, and I was rooting so hard for them to do something, and they had a fantastic story. And you know, unfortunately, with a lot of these Cinderella stories, getting into the World Cup for teams that just celebrate making it, that usually means that qualifying for the World Cup is their big achievement, because of the reality that they're going to come here, that they're going to come into the tournament, and it's going to be heartbreak or ultimately defeat, and relatively early defeat. So already out pretty much. You know, they'd have to beat Australia and then make up an 8-goal differential in order to even just have a possibility of being the third best team, and then, you know, a you know, one of the best thirds in order to get out. So fantastic for them to get here. A fantastic journey in terms of all of the adversity they faced and overcoming that. A step forward for them as a women's soccer nation. But ultimately, you know, I think they'll be going home and it's probably going to be with 0 points and 3 losses after they lose to Australia, you know, on the tomorrow on the 18th as of when we're recording. Let's move on to some less fun stuff in the American soccer landscape. Dan, I'm going to throw it to you. The U.S. national team was back in their 2 warm-up games for the Gold Cup. They had some very interesting roster decisions. Greg Berhalter has been doing some media damage control, and I didn't think it was possible for the U.S. men's national team, for like U.S. men's national team Twitter, to be more upset going into this tournament than they were, you know, last year or even at the end after October, but it seems like the villagers are out. They're angry and they're lighting torches and sharpening pitchforks. Dan, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I think my rant is more or less against the people who have been outraged. You know that the performances against Jamaica. One, I'm going to chalk that roster up, that squad, or that. That result up to the fact that that squad was thrown together about 3 days prior. They had 2 days of training, had to travel across country after most of them had played in an MLS game midweek, over the weekend. They're asked to play against a Jamaica team that will be playing together and has played together before. It's a very experimental side in an experimental formation, and a lot of guys who are fringe national team guys anyways. So the overreaction already started there after that one. It wasn't a good result. I get it. It's a bunch of MLS guys against the USL team virtually that Jamaica fielded. The U.S. men's national team probably should have won that one. But I understand why the performance was bad, because it's all experimental. And it was thrown together last minute. Then you have the roster that comes out. Everybody freaks out about Josh Sargent not being on there. To be honest, if you look at the forward and the striker pool for the men's national team right now, I like Josh Sargent, but he only got 10 games and only started 2 of them and never lasted the full 90 minutes in the Bundesliga. He had 2 goals. One was very fluky. One was a pretty legit goal. And that was it in 10 appearances. I mean, he had about as many goals as Bobby Wood had, and Bobby Wood did that in 20 appearances. And Bobby Wood is no longer the men's national team picture because he's so bad that Hamburg won't take him back and Hanover don't want him again. So, not saying Josh Sargent is bad. Josh Sargent is 100% the future of the men's national team. But if the men's national team is going to go out there and U.S. soccer is going to sit up here and say that we are taking this cup seriously, we are going to win, Josh Sargent doesn't get an experience ticket. Like, this was something I put out in the article there. The experience tickets for the men's, like, you don't see any other top country going out and handing out experience tickets for the most part. England did it with Marcus Rashford instead of Jermaine Defoe. Marcus Rashford proved him right. He played great in the World Cup. Julian Green was that ticket a few years ago. I would have much rather have had Landon Donovan coming off the bench for the U.S. men's national team in the 2014 World Cup than Julian Green, despite the goal that he scored. Landon Donovan would have changed the game for the men's national team then, and he would have provided a leadership aspect that Julian Green could not, and that team needed, period. So those are, you know, it started with Klinsmann handing out stuff to Julian Green. It is a trend that the men's national team should never go down. If you're going to say, we're taking a tournament serious and we're taking our best team that we can possibly take, Josh Sargent might not be your third best striker. And in the situation that they are in with injuries and all that stuff, Jordan Morris has to be on that roster because of his versatility. And Josh Sargent is not a guy you can play on the wing. I get Josh Sargent needs experience, but he just came off his first full professional season. Let's get that. His first full professional season of playing games, doing training week in, week out with Werder, and also having to travel across the world for multiple U.S. men's national team friendlies. The kid's tired. He's 19 years, like he's just 19 years old. That's a lot of soccer to ask of a guy, and then to ask him to potentially play in a tournament and play a part of that at 19 years old, that's very, very, very difficult for them. So there's so many things that have gone into the Josh Sargent decision that everybody blew up about. Oh, why is Josh Sargent not in there? We're doing this instead. Why is Jordan Morse? Why are all these people there? So that's frustrating in itself. People blow up about that. There's no real reason to blow up about that one. And then, of course, the result against Venezuela, which the U.S. men's national team, you know, correctly pooped the bed against Venezuela. Zach Steffen pooped the bed against Venezuela. Omar Gonzalez pooped the bed against Venezuela. When they put in guys like Jozy Altidore, when they put in guys like Michael Bradley, some calming, stabilizing players that are veterans in this men's national team and know what is expected of them every single time they step out on the field, the team looked good. They started to get some chances. They looked better at the latter half of the game. There's still some confusion and some things to work out with, you know, you saw Roldan and Morris kind of getting mixed up at a massive chance right there at the goal mouth against Venezuela. But in reality, the U.S. for 15 minutes of the last two games have put out the best possible lineup that they could. And they played against a team, two teams who put out their best possible lineups at that point. So that's the thing that you have to look at with this men's national team. They've been experimenting over the last two games. The outrage is full on. You know what? They're going to come out. They're going to take care of business in the group. Very likely. They're not going to drop a result against Martinique, and they're going to come out and they're going to start getting their feet under them because this is their first full major tournament under Greg Berhalter. I think there's a lot of stuff that's been going around about this men's national team and all the complaints and all this stuff, and you can keep on going and going and going about. But in reality, this team is still going to be fine. They're still going to make it out of the group. They're likely going to make a run to the semifinals as long as they don't have to face Mexico too early in the knockout stage. And then we can have the debate over whether the men's national team is worse or better than Mexico when they have to face off in a semifinal or final. We can get to that point. But ultimately, it's just a bunch of hot takes and a chance for everybody to jump on the outrage culture bandwagon surrounding the men's national team because it's what's in. And then when they go out and they put out a good result, everyone will say, oh, wow, Greg Berhalter really knows what he's doing. He's a magician, all of this stuff. Relax. Let's get a full year of it under the belt. Man, I mean, Bob Bradley didn't even look that great when he took over. And then Bob Bradley has been the best coach that the U.S. men's national team program has had in the last 12 years. So let's just take a break. Let's take a deep breath. And let's let this tournament play out and then come back with the hot takes. After tournament's over, we've seen a full body of work for the best team. But until then, outrage culture prevails and my rant's over.
Well taken, Dan. I think the U.S. national team fan base is suffering from something that 4 or 5 years ago under Arsene Wenger I would have referred to as Arsenal syndrome, where I think most Arsenal fans basically had two polar opposite views to have, and those were based entirely on recency bias, the most recent result, or in-game what they had seen in the last 5 minutes in terms of how things were going and how they were feeling about those games, that game. And those two opinions were effectively either we are the greatest team in world football or fire everyone, burn down the Etihad, burn down the Emirates, excuse me, and then have Stan Kroenke fire the team. And I feel like that's where U.S. soccer really has been. I saw undertones of it in 2014, but definitely in the 2018 World Cup cycle. And there's been wild mood swings, maybe not to the full extreme from, you know, 0 to 90, for example, but you know, definitely mood swings in terms of like, it is overwhelming majority pessimism and oh my god, this team's worse than it was in 2017. And, you know, I see memes and jokes on the internet, for example, where people are saying, pull the women's team out of the World Cup and send them to the Gold Cup and they would do better than the men's team will, or thinking that Greg Berhalter's got this team on the right track, that we're going to be competitive and get out of the group in 2022, which the U.S. national team is going to qualify for, and then all guns blazing into a potential quarterfinal or semifinal for 2026. One of my philosophies in life and definitely in sports is that happiness is measured by expectations. Rachel, going into this tournament, my expectation, my thought was the U.S. men's national team doesn't need to win the Gold Cup. That doesn't even necessarily need to be the objective or the expectation for Greg Berhalter, but it's an opportunity for an exercise for him to continue to implement his system, use real competitive games in order to test players and understand his depth. I think that makes sense in terms of the preliminary roster that he put forward and ultimately the final 23-man roster and how he's going to play. But then he had some comments going into this past week saying that they are going to work to be competitive. Now, I understand him not coming out and saying, you know, this is a training exercise. We're going to treat it as three friendlies and then potentially, you know, knockout friendlies, so to speak. Where should in the locker room, Greg Berhalter, Ernie Stewart, you know, and the players be as far as their expectations, and have the fans been viewing this through, you know, different color lenses in terms of what they're expecting versus an actual reasonable approach to this Gold Cup, given that the team doesn't have, you know, another competitive relevant game for another 18 months when they try to qualify for 2022?
I think it should just be take every match at a time. I think that's what all of the good, successful teams do. Don't look too far ahead. Just take it day by day by day. Focus on your group stage. Don't even think about the knockout round. Don't even think about any final or anything coming up. Just take it game by game. See what happens. Work on what needs to be worked on. Get those kinks out of the way that were shown through Venezuela and Jamaica, and put your best team out there. It's not, I mean, you look at the group stage and you think, it might be an easy win and might be an easy way to the top, but you don't want to just throw out your second teamers. You want to get your first teamers in there. Do what the United States women's national team did. Run up the score. Why the heck not? Just do whatever you can to win, but just take it a game at a time. Don't focus on those finals, the semifinals, or anything. Just get out of the group and then see what happens. No matter what, I think whether they win, whether they lose, you are going to hear people no matter what. They are going to voice their opinion. You're going to hear the U.S. women's national team scored 13 goals against Thailand, and the U.S. men scored 13 in their last so many dates. Okay, not going to get into that rant, but completely different levels of competition. But just don't focus on that outside noise. Just focus on what needs to be done. This is your preparation for World Cup qualifying. Focus on your opponents. Don't think about the later stages, and then just make sure it all gels together.
Let's move on to the roundtable, unless anybody has any final thoughts. Dan, I'm going to throw it to you. Austin FC came out with some really interesting and, I'd say, exciting news regarding their season ticket holder deposit. What's happened, and what do you think? And should we be viewing Austin FC differently now that they are not, you know, now that they ultimately did not steal Columbus Crew SC from Columbus?
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about Austin still, just because they're associated with Precourt. that's going to be the interesting feel for me all along. It is impressive. 30,000. I don't think Austin will be a bad market. My question is whether they will be an annoying market or not. So we'll see what happens, with them. 30,000 though, it's very impressive. It's very good. But we've had a lot of, FC Cincinnati boasted this wonderful fan base and all this stuff, and we've got all these people that are going to buy in and do all this. We've got this awesome experience here at Nippert, and then the team is a joke. They had a guy who doesn't know anything about soccer making soccer decisions, where I ranted on before many times. I'm not going to go down that road, but the Cincinnati did not get the soccer aspect right. Austin FC, Austin Roots, whatever the crap they're going to call themselves, I don't even remember. I just know there's a tree. It's just plain Austin FC, right? Is that all?
Yes, it's just Austin FC.
Okay, I remember there was some dumb idea for like Austin Roots or something like that. I know Oakland Roots is the thing, but that's because the Oakland tree, if you don't know about Oakland, the tree logo that the Warriors had on their jersey that said the town, that logo is on every single street sign in the city of Oakland. So that's why they call them the Oakland Roots. It's like an NPSL thing. Anyways, Austin has that little tree and all the roots and stuff like that. They made a big deal about there being a tree and roots, so whatever. That's what I thought. But Austin FC, 30,000 supporters. It's cool. It's great. But please get the soccer aspect right, because that ultimately is going to be what keeps fans, what's going to drive fans and drive viewership, drive interest in the sport beyond year of Austin FC. Look at what Orlando, we got 60,000 people. Oh, we're going to build this small stadium. It's going to be loud and full, but the soccer absolutely sucks, and it's not a terrible atmosphere, but it's not great, and it's not a great looking situation down there in Orlando after that. So get the soccer thing right next. That's probably the biggest priority for me when it comes to Austin. I know they're a little ways out from doing that, but FC Cincinnati had a little ways to do it, and then they waited until the last minute to make a bunch of, and almost too late to make a bunch of soccer decisions. If you're going to do it right, get the soccer right and start doing it now.
It kind of looks like the Rafiki tree, now that I'm looking at it. It's not really a giving tree, so to speak. So yeah, maybe like Austin, and I don't know what the actual species of the tree that Rafiki inhabits or, you know, does his little walkabout stuff in. But yeah, like I don't know, like Austin Sudowoodo FC or something. It's kind of got that
feel. Did you ever go to the Tiki Room in Disneyland, and they have all in the Tiki, all the little birds and stuff? You have it at Disney World and Disney. It's like this weird little hut that's kind of in, like, I can't remember what the land is, but it looks like the Tiki Land tree. It does, with all the little parrots. That's what all those little branches in there. It's just a bunch of little parrots just in there. And they're going to start singing some weird 50s song about being in a Tiki Room.
Alrighty then. Moving on, Rachel, I'm going to throw it to you. We love talking about soccer fashion on this podcast, and we officially have the All-Star jersey for the 2019 MLS All-Star game, and the MLS All-Stars will be wearing this really, really cool purple and then kind of off-white jersey with a bunch of stars in it. I like it. What do you think?
Okay, well, first off, I'm probably the last person you should ever talk fashion to because I wear the color black almost every single day. But I love these. And speaking of trees, they have the maple leaf on them and a star. It's cool and it's fun. It's purple and I like it. I give it a solid 9 out of 10. I think it's fun. I do like the maple leaf and the star, like how it's a lighter shade of purple. It's fun. I like it.
Oh, I didn't even notice the little maple leaf one. I remember when, I guess the last MLS All-Star jersey that I really liked, you know, the last 6 or 7 years, was the one that was worn in Chicago, and it was the throwback to the stonewashed denim kit, and they did a really cool, like, subtle fitting in the Canadian leaf into the sort of streaking stars that you have. So that's a really nice touch. I didn't notice it. I like these kits. Probably still not going to buy it because they're one-off, and I don't care for jerseys that are one-off for a meaningless friendly against a European team that's not going to take the tournament seriously. Let's move on to pick'ems, I guess. Dan, I will start with you. We're going to do some very general ones. So, General Dan, walk us through the U.S. Men's National Team Gold Cup group stage and where they ultimately finish in the group.
I think they'll get 6 points out of it. I don't know whether that's... Well, I'll go 7. I'll say they beat Trinidad, they beat Martinique, and they tied Panama in the last group, or in the last game here in Kansas City. It'd be great if they've got all 9. But Trinidad isn't bad, but they're not, you know, it'd be different if it was Jamaica in the group, then I'd be a little interested to see how things go. But, Martinique, this team should, knock on wood, should take care of Trinidad, although we've seen how that's gone in the past. Panama will be the toughest task in the group. But they beat them pretty handily. And World Cup qualifying last time around. And I think that it'll be really fun to see the Jozy Pulisic train go all aboard for that one. And I will be at that match as well. So, good things happened in the last game or of a group and, it went for the U.S. men's national team in Kansas City. So knock on wood, good things happened for them there. I think they get 7 points and finish. They get 7 points and they finish first in the, because they're able to score more goals against Martinique than Panama.
I've got one real-time fact check for you, Dan. The U.S. will be playing Guyana, not Martinique, in the opening.
Sorry.
So, okay. Yes, if you would like to amend your prediction, the floor is yours.
No, we're just substituting Martinique and Guyana. It's pretty much the same thing. I would expect the same result.
Alrighty then. Rachel, your thoughts?
I would say give me 7. I think Dan's hit it on spot. I think the Panama game is going to be a little bit tougher than I think anybody would think. I think Panama is one of those teams that all the time just somehow gets dismissed no matter what. They're probably still trying to make a comeback and show people that they're legitimate after their not so great run at the World Cup last year. So we'll see how that goes. I'm excited. I'll be at the Trinidad game. Hopefully I bring good luck, not bad luck, and we'll just see what happens.
I'll take 7 points for the U.S. national team as well in this. I think they beat Guyana, and it's not any big deal whatsoever. I think I don't know if it's slay the dragon. Maybe it's get the monkey off the back. They do the good soccering things against Trinidad and Tobago, and, you know, ultimately get a result, even if it's not pretty. I don't know if it's cathartic for them. It might be cathartic for Josie and Michael Bradley, and that's probably it. And then I think at that point, with 2 games through, in the group stage, I think it'll already be secured that Panama and the U.S. will advance as the two best teams on paper from this. So I think we'll see some squad rotation from both in the third game. I don't think both will either will take it all too seriously, and ultimately it'll be a fairly meh 1-1 draw. All right, got the result. Let's move on and focus on the knockout stage. I think that prediction is mostly based on just the scheduling with everything, because the two best teams in the group, their first two games are against the two worser teams in the group, and then they're playing each other probably after they've already punched their ticket through to the knockout round. And then we'll move on this coming Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern time, if I'm not mistaken. U.S. Women's National Team will be finishing out their group stage against Sweden. Rachel, I'll throw it to you first. How do the ladies do against Sweden, and where do they ultimately finish up in the group?
I think it's going to be a tight game, but I think it's going to be a 2-1 win to the United States. I think we'll get another Morgan goal, and I think Rose Lavelle or Julie Ertz will find the back of the net. I don't think Sweden's going to go scoreless. I think they're going to find their way to infiltrate the United States defense and Alyssa Nayer. Give me them on top of the group, and today they found out that if they win the group, they will face Spain in the first round of the knockouts, whom they beat 1-0 in January.
Dan?
I'm going to go 3-1 to the women's national team. Like I said, I think the Sweden defense or Sweden's attack somehow get through the U.S. and kind of send a warning shot for them defensively, something that they can go back and look on and say, okay, we got to work on these things, and maybe help Alyssa Nayer out, give her a good test. But ultimately, I think the U.S. women's national team's attack is just too powerful to overcome, and I don't think Sweden's a high enough scoring team to really threaten the U.S. women's national team. So, 3-1 to the ladies, and they'll finish first in Group F. First in the group, right? E? D?
Yes.
F.
Yes, E.
F.
F. Am I right? I was right.
Yes, you were.
First in Group F.
F is for friends who podcast together. I'll take 3-1 to the women's national team as well. I think they'll be up 2-0. It'll probably be maybe a lack of concentration or we've already got this in the bag. They get Sweden a goal. I like Alex Morgan to get something from this one, and then maybe one of the other midfielders. And I wouldn't be shocked if Carly Lloyd subs into this game late and then gets that third goal to really put the game on ice. And I think the U.S. women's national team, you know, those last 20 minutes, they'll really be jogging it out to finish top of the group with 3 wins and 9 points. That does it for us tonight, folks, as far as our major stuff. It is time for last words. Rachel, I will throw it to you. Do you have any last words, and where can people find you on the Twitterverse?
Last words, go USA, see what happens. I'm excited to watch them play on Thursday. I'm excited to watch Jamaica tomorrow. I hope they score their first ever World Cup goal against the shaky Australia defense. You can find me at Rachel McCrigger. 2 A's, not just one.
Dan?
You can find me at SperryDaniel94. I guess we can do this announcement now, but in December, the Sperry clan will be adding, through free transfer, another human member. My wife and I are going to be having a child here coming up. It will be a avid mix of Kansas City and sport, or San Francisco, Bay Area fanatics, and it will definitely somehow choose Liverpool over Manchester United, just to spite me. We don't know gender yet. We're still in the earlier stages of this, but it is very exciting. It is a fun announcement. We've made it public on Facebook, so I thought I'd say something about it now. Those are the last words. If you have any parenting advice, at SperryDaniel94, I'd love to hear it. Also, would like to give a special shout out, thanks to our sponsor, Golden Goal Press, the best choice for you to get custom shirts, hats, mugs, and other items for yourself or your organization. Check out their amazing products at a fraction of the price of other places at GoldenGoalPress.com.
Dan, you said it was a free transfer. Wouldn't it technically be a homegrown signing?
It technically would be a homegrown signing, but those were technically a free transfer.
So. Oh, you wait until Matt and I like unleash our sports preferences and terrible sports picks on your child.
No, I wouldn't. I'm going to assume anything I say, Southern California, pro Southern California, are going to go right over that kid's head. And definitely, not that I do not bleed orange, but I'm going to assume that child, if picking any throwball allegiances, will absolutely not be a Denver Broncos fan either.
Exactly.
All right. So in any case, listeners, follow me on Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard. Check us out across all social media platforms at Last Word SC, LastWordOnSoccer.com. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Last Word on Sports or LWS Radio. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier for MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get your custom scarves through your group of your team for Roughnecks at RoughneckScarves.com. They got a bunch of great stuff for the Women's World Cup out right now. And as we enter into the later rounds of the US Open Cup, lots of great MLS versus US sell matchups that you could certainly look into there as well. I will be at the Gold Cup game in Denver. Martinique versus Cuba in the first match, and then the nightcap should be absolutely lit with Eltree hosting Canada. So hit me up on Twitter if you're going to be there, and maybe we can party, have some Colorado style Mexican food with some green chili. With that, thank you very much for joining us tonight, listeners. We'll see you next week.